All right, hi everybody, and welcome to lecture 75 in this American History program of History at Our House for the elementary class. The topic of today's class is Reconstruction. It's a fairly straightforward word compared to others that we have been examining recently, such as secession. But the basic question here is, how do you put a country back together again after a civil war over slavery? It's certainly not an easy thing to do. And it has this problem of reconstructing the United States of America had many different aspects to it. And just to get things started here on the screen, I want to just share a painting that I like about this moment, or in time, I guess you could say, at the end of the Civil War. And it's a painting of a Union soldier, a Union officer in the dark uniform over on the right-hand side. And and the other soldiers with the guns there, monitoring some prisoners from the South. And I enjoy this painting because it kind of captures this moment of them. Well, they've surrendered, you know, their guns are on the ground, but they're looking at each other and they're taking each other in. And so it's a kind of, there's a tension here in terms of how they are viewing each other. Why? Well, because these people were, until recently, on opposite sides of a war. They would have killed each other if they could. But now that the war is over, they're back to being fellow Americans again. So how do you do that? How do you go back to having a life and having a country in which people used to do that to each other? That's quite a challenge. Rosetta, go ahead.
I've just got a question.
Yeah.
You said, I can't remember the word, but it was something to do with prisoners.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. Say it one more time.
I can't remember the word, but it was something to do with prisoners.
To do with prisoners. Well, I'm lost because I don't know what your question means, so I don't know how to answer it. What to do with prisoners? This is a painting having to do with prisoners. And I'm not clear on what it is you're asking. So we'll have to move on from that one. I'm not sure what to say. These men are going to be released and they're going to go back to their homes, and people on both sides are going to go back to their families. And many families, of course, are not going to have their loved ones anymore because they will have died in the war. There were 600,000 dead as a result of the Civil War. Think of that number. That is the entire population of a good-sized city. 600,000 people dead because of this civil war. How do you put a country back together again once that has happened? A lot has to do with how people feel about each other, which is kind of captured in this painting. But even just on a practical level, there was a very serious problem. And that was, how do you put the government back together again? So when we're speaking of reconstruction, of putting the United States back together again, there are kind of two problems, I guess you could say, if we're going to divide it up. I would say that one is the practical problem of how to put the governments of the country back together again. And then the other is this broader problem of how to put the people back together again. How to make the country, or remember how I was saying, the sentiment of union How do we put the union? Because that's more than just the country. You can have a government, and that government functions, and it makes laws, and so on and so forth. But the people of the country and how they feel is another thing altogether. And do they really feel like they are a part of a country? And how does that affect their lives day in, day out, is another issue. So there's both of those. Today, we're going to mainly pay attention to the issue of the government. Because, well, in a way, it's the easiest. And also, it's the first problem that has to be solved. You can't have the union of people's feelings. You can't have a country without a government. And so this is the problem we're going to look at mainly today, is the reconstruction of the American government. And the first thing that we have to say about that is that it was necessary. In other words, the American government was broken. In what ways could we understand this thought? The American government was broken. We could think of that in different ways. What would you think of that? What would you understand by that? In what way was the American government broken? And it needed to be constructed again, reconstructed, fixed, put back together again. How was it broken? How about start with secession? Who can make a connection here between those two ideas? Secession and Reconstruction. So, Patrick, I'm putting you on the spot. What was secession?
To leave the Union.
To leave the Union. But to leave the government of the Union, right? The states seceded. So now, did the government of the United States include the southern states? They had. Got to go back to that verb again. Seceded. Right? That's the verb for secession. They had seceded. So they're not in the government anymore. So that is one sense in which the government was broken. They were not in it anymore. They had declared their intention to leave, and they had left. So how do you bring them back? There's an interesting problem. And the way, one suggestion I have for you guys to understand this a little bit, why this is such a serious problem, is kind of reminds me of the issue of criminals in a society, of individual people and criminals, and bringing states that rebelled back into a country. I think there's kind of a similarity there, because a criminal is an individual person who breaks the law. A state that secedes and rebels is a whole collection of people inside of a state that rebel against the law. So it's kind of a similar problem. So, for instance, if you had an individual that you knew that, well, let's use a not too terrible example. He was a thief, and he stole money from everybody in your neighborhood. He would break into people's houses, and he would steal money, and he was caught by the police, and he went to prison, and then after 5 years, he's going to be released from prison. Now what? How does this individual fit back into society? Can you see that would be a problem? How would it be a problem for that person? How would it be a problem for the individual, you know, people in society around that person? Jeremy?
Well, first of all, no one would respect him.
Right.
Because he was a thief.
Okay, so now that's kind of a union inside of a community, right? You would look at that person and you would suspect him and you would be afraid of him. And would you want to hire him to work in your corner store? Would you hire him to work at the gas station and handle the money, Abby?
No.
It would be very difficult, right? And you would also want, in your society, you would want some sense of protection, and the government would have to do this. The government would have to say, wait a minute, what happened now? Am I still sharing my screen? Oh, something awkward happened. I apologize. I think I lost the sharing of my screen, so I'm going to come back and do that. Anyway, so it would be hard to bring that person back into society, right? And it is hard for people who have been criminals in the past, especially if they don't intend to be criminals again. It's hard for them to put their life back together again, you could say, to reconstruct their life. Some people succeed and other people don't. Some people just cannot stop being criminals and they go back to prison and back to prison. And others try really, really hard and it's very difficult to do. So imagine entire states that have declared rebellion. How do you bring them back into society? Just like for individuals, you have to have some really pretty strict rules for managing those people. Right? So for instance, for a criminal who's already been convicted of a crime, he went to prison, he's been let out, what does the government have to say to him when they're letting him out? Are they saying to him, you're just like everybody else? How do you have to, you know, how does the government have to act with regard to somebody who's already been convicted of a crime? What do they do? Maybe you guys don't know. So when people are let out of prison, do they just go and do whatever they want after that? The government has to pay attention to what they're doing. Walker, what happens?
They probably have some kind of person who is watching them.
Right, they have a person who they go on what's called parole, and they have somebody that they have to report to and explain to them what's going on, and they don't get to have a completely regular life, right? They have to follow certain rules to show that and to prove that they do intend to return to society and be rights-respecting citizens again. If they fail to do that, then they go back to prison. And especially if they commit crimes, of course, they go back to prison. So in this case of reconstructing the country, there were these entire states full of people that had said, we're not going to follow the laws of the United States anymore. So the American government had to say, well, okay, you have rebelled, and now we're going to put you back in the country, but you don't get to be like every other state. Right? You wouldn't treat a state that rebelled the same as a state that hadn't. And that was going to be quite a challenge now. How do we put them back in? And one of the things that went along with this challenge, remember, was this proclamation that Abraham Lincoln had issued as president. The proclamation of what, Patrick?
Don't remember the other word.
No, what's the word? A crucial vocabulary word from yesterday. The word for making somebody free. Who's got it? Sigourney.
Emancipation.
Emancipation Proclamation. Right, okay. So, look at what Abraham Lincoln said. He says, I declare these people in these states of rebellion, South Carolina, Virginia, Georgia, so on, those slaves to be free. Okay, and so now, if you want to be a state in, if you want to rejoin the Union, if you're Mississippi and Alabama and so on, you want to rejoin the Union, you have to follow this rule. You cannot have those slaves anymore. But let me show you something else that was broken in trying to fix the United States. Hold on a second. If we go back to this map, and I remind you that the Emancipation Proclamation was for these states in pink. Can you see the problem of what else was broken? Remember what I told you about the Emancipation Proclamation? It had limits. Look at this map, and I'll give you a hint. What about the states in dark blue? Who can see the problem? Who can see what was still broken about the United States government in a really important, deeply important way? Wyatt, what was broken?
There are still a few states that do have slavery. And also, there are little places that are already conquered, as it said yesterday. So there are still places where there is slavery.
Still places where there is slavery. And the Emancipation Proclamation only said, the slaves that are in the rebellious areas are free and will remain free. But at the same time, it did not say that the people of Kentucky that have slaves can't take them down to Georgia and sell them to people down there. And now they can have new slaves to replace the ones they had before. So we can imagine the rebirth of slavery after the Civil War. Wouldn't that be terrible? What was the whole thing for? So now there was something that needed to be done here. The country had to be put back together again properly. These rebellious states had to be dealt with. But more than that, slavery had to be dealt with everywhere. How was it to be done? How was it to be done? Well, just like, as I said, when you bring a citizen back into society after he's been a criminal, he's been in prison, and you put special rules on him. Well, what the federal government said was, you rebellious states, you don't now have the same rights as all the other states. And so if you want to rejoin, well, you have to, you don't have a choice, to rejoin the Union, you're going to have to do certain things. So you are going to have to, you're going to have to get, well, the rule was 10% of the population of the state has to show up to a government official and swear an oath to the Constitution. In other words, swear loyalty to the United States. And then once 10% of the people have done that, then you will be allowed to elect a new government. You can't have any of the leaders of your Confederate governments in that new government, but you'll be allowed to make a new one. And the federal government will recognize that government once you have abolished slavery in the laws of your state. So those were the special conditions. This was the deal. If you want back in, if you want to be a regular state, just like an individual would want to be a regular citizen, if you want to be a regular state now that you've rebelled, these are the things you must do. Enough of your population has to show up and take an oath of loyalty, and you have to make a new government, and to make that government, you must abolish slavery as a part of the laws of your state. And then we will recognize you once again as a state within the Union. That was the bargain. Sigourney, put your hand down. So that was the bargain. And unfortunately, the Southern states didn't take that bargain. They didn't do it. They refused to go along. Why did they refuse to go along with it? Anybody guess? Why wouldn't they take this bargain? They were not going to be allowed back into the Union. Why didn't they take the bargain, Rosetta?
Because they didn't want to abolish slavery.
They didn't want a good answer. They didn't want to abolish slavery, right? They didn't. That's kind of a specific answer. Abby, what do you have to say?
They basically, I think, they just didn't want to do what the proclamation, what the oath said.
Right, exactly. Yeah, this was a proclamation that Abraham Lincoln issued, like the Emancipation Proclamation. It was another one, and so it was a proclamation of Reconstruction, and they didn't want to do it. Yeah, We don't want to follow your rules. We don't want to come back in according to your rules. So this, they had lost the war, but that didn't mean that they didn't still feel the way that they felt, right? And didn't, weren't angry and resentful and all of those things that people feel when they have a terrible conflict against each other. So they didn't take the deal. So then, how was slavery going to be abolished? There was a way. These states were not... Whoops, I can't do the highlighting thing that I like to do on this particular image. These pink states were not in the Union. So, well, they were and they weren't. They were not officially recognized inside of the government, inside the federal government. So what could now happen now that they were not officially inside of the American government? Something could happen that couldn't happen before because they refused to join back up. They would not abolish slavery on their own, but there was a way that slavery could be abolished. And really only one way that it could be. By the federal government. How could the federal government abolish slavery? We talked about it so many times when we were talking about the growth of the states and how many states were pink and how many states were blue. What was the way that the government could get rid of slavery? I'll give you a hint. How could you make a change to the Constitution? What was that called? A change to the Constitution. Jeremy?
An amendment?
An amendment. How could you make one, Jeremy? What would you need? What's the word for what's the word for more than a majority of the states?
A supermajority?
Supermajority, excellent. So now that these pink states were not in the Union officially, you could get a supermajority. So there was still a federal government. It was a broken version of itself, but it still existed. And this, so now they could pass us a new amendment to the Constitution, and it would become a law of the United States. So this is known as the 13th Amendment. If we go to Wikipedia, and does anybody remember how many amendments were in the Bill of Rights? It was a nice round number. There had been 10 of them. So there had been 10. And since the original Bill of Rights, there had been two other minor changes made to the Constitution. So the 11th and the 12th Amendment. So once we get to, see there they are, the 11th and the 12th. And once we get to the 13th, this is where we see the big change. Now, President Lincoln had wanted to make this change. Unfortunately, very sadly, he was actually killed before this could happen. So I don't know if you guys know the story, and it's unfortunately, as the president, again, because of the Civil War, because people of the South were against the Civil War and against the government, President Lincoln was, when somebody who is like a leader of a country or a very important person is killed because he's the leader, people call that assassination. President Lincoln was assassinated, and so he could not oversee this tragic story. So if you learn about Abraham Lincoln, which is certainly a good subject, if you're going to go to your public library and get some books, biography books about him, you will learn that after the Civil War, he was killed, which is very, very sad. But nonetheless, he had this idea of making an amendment to the Constitution. And after he was dead, they still managed to do it. And we can read it right here. Does anybody want to try to read this? It could be a little bit tricky reading, but if I have a confident reader, I will welcome a confident reader. So, Abby, go ahead.
Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction.
Okay, subject to the laws of the United States, right? So, no slavery shall exist within the United States. Now, people can be forced to work against their will, but only in what case, Abby?
If they've committed a crime.
Yeah, only if you're a criminal and you are, I don't know, there's different jobs that they make them do, clean up the highways and stuff like that. You'll see them sometimes doing different kinds of things. But that's the only case where you can force somebody to work against their will in the United States is if they are already a convicted criminal. All right, so that was, as you can see, ratified, which means agreed to by a majority of the states by 1865. So that became a law in the United States, no longer having to do with particular states. That meant that there was no... Now, so what did that do? It meant that there is no blue and there is no pink. Right? What it meant was, this is a federal law. It means that it applies everywhere equally. It's no longer an issue for the states to decide. So, in a way, by refusing to make laws to abolish slavery, the states did something, again, remember the word that we had yesterday for getting the opposite of what you wanted? What's the word for the opposite result that you intended? What do we call that when you get the opposite of what you were hoping for? Nemo?
Ironic.
Yeah, it was ironic. The states wanted to retain their rights and their kind of special powers as states. The irony was by refusing to abolish slavery in their own place, in their own state, they made it possible for the federal government to create an amendment taking away this power from them. Now, of course, they didn't like it. And we said that already, right? They refused to make their own laws getting rid of slavery. So now that the federal government had made a law saying no more slavery, how do you think they acted? Oh, okay, thank you. We're perfectly happy to have an amendment rammed down our throats by this federal government that we hate, right? Jeremy, how did they act?
Well, they must have really hated it and tried to rebel again.
Yeah, good answer. Now, not officially rebel, right? But their rebellion now was kind of sneaky, secret, and unofficial. The people who were in charge of governments, the people who had, you know, big plantations and businesses and so on, they made agreements and sometimes they made sneaky laws within their communities that were laws that kind of created unofficial slavery. It wasn't the same as having a law that says, you know, these people are owned by others, but they made laws that historians have called black codes. And for instance, it became a law in a lot of places that if you didn't have a job, you could be arrested. Well, so now you had been a slave and you were freed. You didn't have to work for anybody else. But now what were you going to do? Have to go and find work, right? Make a life for yourself. Well, what if you couldn't find work? So now they made laws that says if you couldn't find work, the government would arrest you and put you to work. So what's that? That's just a new kind of slavery, right? A new kind of rebellion against the idea of freeing the slaves. So the American government had to, recognizing that the southern states were still rebelling against this idea of getting rid of slavery, they had to do a number of things to protect the people that they were now being called freedmen. So freedmen, right? Kind of as one word, a freedman or freedmen for plural. So the federal government made a freedmen's bureau, a special part of the federal government to take care of the problems that were faced by the people who were now free, the former slaves, and including giving food to them, giving them clothing if they were destitute, taking care of them, and taking land that was now vacant from the many hundreds of thousands of former slave owners that had died, and giving 40 acres to any freedmen who could work it. Kind of reminds you of something, doesn't it? This I like. Does it remind you of something from colonization? How to make kind of a new freedom, Nemo?
The headright system?
Yeah, right. It was a kind of headright system against slavery. The Freedmen's Bureau was a kind of headright system against slavers. We're going to give land to these people. They were formerly forced to work land for other people. All right, we're taking land away from the slave owners, and we're going to give 40 acres to each former slave. That's good. To me, that was definitely a positive thing. And then on top of that, in order to make sure that former slaves get all the same protections as everybody else under the law, we're going to pass another amendment, the 14th Amendment. And so this amendment was because, well, these former slaves, well, they were kind of in limbo now as to who they were. They were no longer slaves, but there was something that they weren't yet. They were not yet recognized as citizens. They were not yet viewed as Americans like everybody else. Not yet officially recognized as being Americans. Just by being emancipated did not make them Americans, right? They were not, just by that alone, Americans. So the 14th Amendment was passed, which said any person who is born in the United States or naturalized, meaning kind of brought here and lived his life here, is a citizen of the United States. And because of that, then, every person who is a citizen has the same protections under the law, and no state can take away the life, liberty, or property of that person in any special, in any particular way, just because they used to be a slave. So this was the main part. There were other parts to the 14th Amendment, which also turned out to be important. But the basic idea was now the former slaves are also citizens. All right, we got to finish up here with Reconstruction. As we can see, it was going on for quite some time. The Civil War lasted until 1865, and Reconstruction went on all the way until 1877. So that's 12 years. And it lasted that long because every time the federal government would make a new set of laws, the Southerners would rebel against it in a new way. They were not happy to be back in the Union, right? That feeling that of being an American, they didn't have that. They were still in their hearts rebelling against what was being done to them, did not want it to be done to them. And the saddest example of that was a secret organization that was formed that was called the Ku Klux Klan, or KKK for short. And it was probably the worst part of all of Reconstruction, was the Southerners who saw themselves losing their power decided that the only way to have power against newly freed black people was to be violent against them, to be criminals, essentially, and to form a secret society of criminals called the KKK. And so it took about 7 years for the federal government to stop the KKK. to in 1870, the federal government made a new set of laws, the 15th Amendment, saying that every former person who's been a slave can also vote, no matter what race or previous condition of servitude they have been in, and the federal government will protect them as a citizen of the United States against the KKK. Because now the Southerners were trying every kind of awful trick to have a kind of unofficial slavery, to use violence to scare people and to not let them have a good life, to not let them pursue their happiness as every individual should be able to do. So it took another 7 years for the southern states for the KKK to be broken, and for the southern states to all rejoin the Union kind of officially. And finally, in a sense, you could say the country was put back together again. When we return next week, we'll see this will come back, this issue of the South and the North and disagreements with people and still the idea of not allowing black people to be equal and so on. It's not gone just because of the Civil War and Reconstruction. And so we'll talk about it again, sadly, but we will have to because it remains important. But when we come back, we will see that, well, thankfully, at least officially this was over, and therefore life in America could resume, and some wonderful new advances were starting to happen. And so we'll look at that positive story. It's called the Industrial Revolution. We'll talk about that next week. Okay, that's it for today. Thank you, everybody. And tomorrow, of course, is History Through Art. Bye for now, folks.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.